raised in the swamp, in back of a slough. He grew up eating rattlesnake meat, drinking homemade brew. The folks hereabout call him Gator, and everybody knows him well. Meanest man ever hit the swamp. Folks swear he comes straight out of hell.
Junkions, welcome to another exciting episode of Junk Food Cinema, brought to you by FilmSchoolRejects.com. Shine. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and I'm joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host. He's a novelist, he's a screenwriter, he's a lieutenant of Megaforce, he is the biggest rum runner this side of the Mason-Dixon line. Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
How y'all doing?
I think you're doing pretty well because you are tuned in to the Colton Exploitation Filmcast that is every bit as entertaining as an all-night dentist. And we are finishing up one of my favorite series that we've ever done. We're, of course, talking about Octobert, celebrating the films of the late, great Burt Reynolds.
And we decided we would put two of his great films together because, frankly, discussing one without the other just... It's like talking about PB&J without the J.
I don't truck with it, is what I will say. Talking about just one movie and not the other is something I don't truck with. But if you truck with this podcast, I highly recommend finding all of our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show...
I mean, y'all really like our show.
I mean, you like it more than shaky pudding. You can go over to... It's just going to happen. I'm going to slip into it. I got to stop myself. You go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. For as little as a dollar an episode, you get access to bonus content that no one else gets to hear. This month, for example, we had a Best of Fantastic Fest, a mailbag. We did an episode, an a la mode on Mandy. We're doing something really cool for Halloween. So there's a lot of great bonus content. Great time to jump on board that. We also have a swag store where you can proudly proclaim to the world that you are, in fact, a junkie on.
Or shamefully, as some people have done.
Hey, I mean, buy it no matter what your attitude is about it. Look,
if you really are the person who wants to put us on a pillowcase and sleep next to us every night, by all means, be that guy. Keep the drool on Brian's side of the pillow. Sure, yeah. That's all I ask.
But the whispering will be coming from Cargill's side. That's all I'm going to say.
I'll dig it real good there, Brian.
Junkfoodcinema.com/store. That's where you go for all that stuff. Hey, speaking of things that I would buy for a dollar, the double bill that we have put together for this episode is, to me, when I talk about movies that kind of are the founders of this podcast, the movies that I love unabashedly that exist in genres that need more celebration and need to be talked about more. The very reason we started this podcast in the first place, I think of movies like White Lightning.
My name's Gator McCluskey. You know why I'm here, don't you? I said you know why I'm here, don't you?
Burt Reynolds is Gator McCluskey. He's a booze running, motor gunning, law breaking, love making rebel. He hits the screen like a bolt of white lightning.
All units, got a man heading after Jackson Road. Cut him out.
Thank you.
Burt Reynolds is White Lightning. He never strikes twice, because once is enough.
And Gator!
Burt Reynolds is Gator, and inside of 10 minutes, he's going to destroy 14 boats. He's going to wreck dozens of cars. Blow up a motel. He's going to drag a man around a parking lot.
Bye, guys.
And throw him off the top of his car. And just wait until you see what he does in the movie. Now, Burt Reynolds is about to be maimed, mangled, mutilated, and made mincemeat of as he takes on the crooked cops in Dunston County.
There's nobody out there this time of year.
Wait a minute. Who said that you could make all the decisions? I should be making the decisions. Mm-hmm. That was a good decision that you made. Wasn't that a good one that you made?
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Jack Weston. Lauren Hutton. Jerry Reed. Alice Ghostly. And the master of the hit, slam, bash, choke, smother, and squash. A man of stamina, strength, and boundless energy, the one and only Burt Reynolds.
Now we know you're in there. We coming to get you, Gator.
Holy shit, these two movies.
First time I saw them together. I've only seen them together. In my head, they exist together. The further away I get from them, every time I watch them, I start to forget which one is which, because they blend together so well. They are, of course, a singular movie, and then its sequel, kind of. The first time I watched it, Quentin Tarantino showed it at one of his QT festivals, mm-hmm. and showed it as a double bill of White Lightning and Gator on 35mm from his collection.
There's a very specific reason that Tarantino would have showed that. If you watch Tarantino's movies, you know he's a fan of at least White Lightning, but we'll get to that in just a bit. So you saw them together for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I've only watched them together since. They're not movies. Now, if I could only pick one, I have my favorite of the two, clearly. Yeah. But it is, they are an interesting pair of films that one's a sequel, kind of.
Yes.
And it's just kind of, like, it's the same character, but it's almost like there's nothing in common. And I kind of love the shit out of that.
Now, White Lightning, this is 1973. This is Burt Reynolds ascending to superstardom. And this movie...
Still doesn't have the mustache yet.
This movie created the genre of... I mean, maybe not created, but definitely made the most popular the genre that we like to call hicksploitation.
And these are kind of the granddaddies of hicksploitation.
As Burt Reynolds described it himself in an interview, these movies were... made in the South by Southerners for the South.
Yeah, and it's interesting how they thread the needle so that the films can escape the South.
Yeah.
Because there's some characters that pull some double duty. There's some racism that is both rewarded and frowned upon at the same time.
There is a marked, especially in White Lightning, I'm going to say this right now, there is quite a bit of liberal-leaning thinking in this movie that I found fascinating.
Both movies, actually, which is interesting.
If I'm thinking of which of the two movies falls in line with what Burt is describing, where he continues on to say, like, it didn't matter if these movies sold a ticket north of the Mason-Dixon line, they were going to make all their money back in Nashville. Anything else was just gravy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's Gator, because Gator is absolutely playing to, you know, the banjo picking and the rebel flags. And like, there's a lot about Gator that feels way more Southern. Whereas I feel like White Lightning, while the plot, the premise, a lot of the characters are totally in that world, the mentality of the movie is actually strikingly progressive. And we'll get to that as well. But what I didn't remember about White Lightning, is that it opens with a really brutal murder.
One of the great fucked up opening scenes where it just seems like it's a very 70s kind of scene. You see a bunch of people going, you know, on canoes in the river, and then, oh, hey, it's Ned Beatty in the river.
And then two of the people. Yeah. First of all, Ned Beatty going up river. You should be concerned immediately.
First red flag.
But then you notice that one of the boats going down the river has two teenagers who are tied up and they're gagged and they're trying to get out.
And they're chained to a cinder block.
They're chained to a cinder block. And then Ned Beatty shoots the boat to make it sink. And then they drown. It was so fucked up. I was like, is this a Bagul apparatus? Like, what the fuck is this kill? This is nuts.
I'm not saying that may have been the inspiration for something at some point. Okay. All
right.
But it was kind of the inspiration for something at some point.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, yeah, no, this is one of those great fucking fucked up kills. What then follows is we go to prison and we find out that Burt Reynolds is in prison and somebody comes to visit him and tells him that his brother died.
He's just got done playing football against the guards.
I have headcanon.
Oh, good.
We'll get into it later in the episode, but I have headcanon that ties that together with some other movies.
Meryl, please play the canon theme. Thank you very much.
I have some headcanon later on. But yeah, so he's in prison, finds out his brother's been killed.
His brother turns out to be one of the two teenagers on that boat that sank.
Tries to escape.
That was deliberately sank and murdered by Ned.
To escape to go get revenge. Gets caught. Like, he doesn't get very far. Gets caught, and then he goes and talks to the warden and says, hey, I want you to bring in the feds. I want a deal.
Because Ned Beatty is playing the sheriff of a small town that gets almost all of its money from illegal whiskey distilling, or moonshining, as it is called.
Corn liquor. Corn liquor, white lightning, not so good.
Not in its like actual purest form, and you know, the I don't know if there are moonshine purists, but don't drink anything that's got two X's on the bottle.
By the way,
it's Dos Equis.
One of the best gags in this movie, in these movies, happens in Gator, where somebody's going through the corn liquor and he's pouring Coca-Cola into it, and he's like, "What are you doing?" Making bourbon. And it's like, oh my God. Like, of course, you're gonna sell this off as bad bourbon. Jesus fucking Christ, Deep South.
So I have two quick things to say about the opening of this movie. First of all, we have unintentionally done a lot of Ned Beatty recently.
Not unintentionally. Ned Beatty was a constant collaborator of Burt Reynolds. They were good friends, and he was coming in and working on a lot of stuff.
But what was the last movie we talked about prior to October? Superman. There's been a lot of overarching Ned Beatty. That's all I'm saying.
We've had a bucket full of Ned.
Bullet to the Ned. It's our series all about Ned Beatty.
We're going fishing with Beatty, you know. This is the Beatty store.
The Master Beatty collection.
There it is. There's the big joke.
We'll get there. Thanks for joining us for this workshop of jokes for Junk Food Cinema.
Brought to you by filmschoolrejects.com.
And the other thing is, this prison break reminds us of the incredible score of this movie. That was done by, I keep wanting to say Elmer Bernstein. It is not, in fact, Elmer Bernstein, but it is a gentleman with the last name of Bernstein.
Berenstein, or is it that universe?
He is, in fact, a bear. I don't know what I was thinking. But the music in this prison break, where Burt Reynolds beats the shit out of a guard and feels like just a hulking monster of a, like, it's like you're reminded, like, the first time you see him, like, oh, he's still super charming. And then he, like, wails on this guard to get away, and you're like, oh, he's also very physically imposing. I guess sometimes we forget about that. But, yeah, so he beats up this guard, and you hear this music by Charles Bernstein. And that, it's just this do-do-do-do-bear, do-do-do-do-bear. And I'm like, where have I... Kill Bill. It's Kill Bill when she's being surrounded by the crazy 88s.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, and apparently he also used it in Inglourious Basterds.
Yes.
So, yes, Quentin Tarantino, clearly a huge fan of this movie.
Well, yeah, no, he absolutely is. He went off. That was the great thing about going to the QTs back when he was doing them is he would get up and he would like do a 10-15 minute riff on each movie.
Yeah.
And it's just pure high energy, probably coked Tarantino, Mike O'Kane.
Yeah.
Going full Tarantino on movies. And this is why this movie is the greatest fucking movie ever. Okay. This is why it's fucking awesome. And like, he would just go off on the, and that was, he did all of the Joe Don Baker walking talls together one night. He did a whole, this particular one, he was prepping to make Kill Bill and he was going through all the revenge films that he was going to reference in Kill Bill.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. There is one Joe Don Baker walking tall and then multiple Bo Svenson walking talls.
Oh, correct? Yes. That's what I was talking about. It was the Bo Svensons that he showed.
He just showed the Bo Svensons?
Now
that sounds very Tarantino to me. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not only gonna.
This is like 15 years ago, yeah. So I remember there were a lot of them. there were a lot of walking talls, and I can't remember if we did the Joe Don Baker or if we just did the Bo Svensons. But I do remember doing Gator and White Lightning together. Yeah, no, he definitely drew from this, and the thing is this is of the two movies. This is the mean fucking movie.
It's very hard-boiled. It's very much a dark and, you know, like, as much as you think of movies like, when we talked about Hicksploitation before, we talked about Smokey and the Bandit. When you think of Smokey and the Bandit, you think about the jokes. You think about the stunts, and you think about the jokes. This has stunts. This has jokes. It also has a dark story kind of underlining it.
And it has, the first one, White Lightning, has a villain has Ned Beatty been this punchable ever again?
No.
Like, he's so fucking vile in this movie that by the third fucking act of this movie, you want to see this man die horribly. You want to watch him die screaming.
You see a scene where he goes and starts talking about how commies are taking over America and how, like, we shouldn't give black people the vote. And the thing
about how the federal government needs to stay out of our business because they're not paying for our police force.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to put food on the because I split this money up amongst my guys. And that's how they put food on the table. And the government's not going to put food on their table.
If you don't find him punchable, the good news is I'm pretty sure Ned Beatty is running on the Republican ticket for Congress in this fall.
Well, the thing is everything that comes out of his mouth hasn't changed from the South in 40 fucking years.
And it's really disturbing. But what I find interesting about that is you don't hear Burt Reynolds saying anything even remotely close to this horse shit, and thereby firmly establishing that the person with these views, and but the fact that we saw him murder two teenagers at the beginning of the movie, they compartmentalize all of that Southern thinking into the worst character in the movie. And that's what I mean by it's very interesting sort of, like, I don't want to, it's not an agenda, but it's like the way they framed all this is actually very progressive.
Well, it is, but also keep in mind that this is 73, which means they made it in 72. And 72 is the beginning of the Southern strategy. Like, this is the, you know, the South is still Democratic. It would eventually become what was known as the Dixiecrats for about 20, 30 years.
Oh, yes.
In which the Dixiecrats were people who were registered Democrats, but they voted for Republicans in the South. And so finally, in 94, the Contract with America completely flipped that base to the Republican Party and gave the Republicans the South. And that was known as the Southern Strategy. Now, the Southern Strategy was built around racism and built around grabbing all these people who were in the Democratic Party but did not like integration. They did not like desegregation. Oh,
that's the other thing that Betty says. They're going to integrate our schools.
They're going to integrate our schools,
like,
yeah.
Dude, it's 1973. That should have already fucking happened.
But in Gator, there is that moment where, you know, we'll get there in a bit when we talk about that one, but where one of the characters looks at Burt Reynolds and says, well, you've always been kind of colorblind. And like stresses the fact that he doesn't have a problem with anybody, because that's him. Yeah. But the thing is he's never been like, as he talks about, he's never been liberal or progressive. He's never really cared about a cause. He's never done any good in the world, but his brother hadn't done anything to the world at all, and his brother was the educated one, and his brother was the light, and this fucking asshole came and snuffed it out, and by God, he was going to get his fucking revenge.
So he makes a deal with the federal investigators to basically go undercover and bust this sheriff, because the feds know he's dirty, but they can't prove anything, and it's driving them crazy. And so they are trying to get any hard evidence they can that this sheriff is taking money from these illegal, you know, moonshine runners, and just to bring him down. So he makes a deal with the government, and he ends up making a contact with a character named a character played by Matt Clark, who we've covered in movies recently. Actually, he was in The Driver. You've also probably seen him in eventually Buckaroo Banzai and Back to the Future 3. Like, he's a character actor you recognize just by looking at him.
Okay, before we go any further,
yeah,
we need to talk about some of the talent behind the camera.
We did mention, by the way, we mentioned Michael Caine. This movie is directed by Joseph Sargent, who has
done a couple of things we've talked about.
Also directed Jaws the Revenge. Now, I don't want to kick the man, because for every Jaws the Revenge, keep in mind that his next film after White Lightning was The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
And also a Junk Food alum, we talked about his wonderful 1983 film Nightmares.
Yes.
So he's done a number of good films. He did MacArthur, which is good. And he's done a lot of bad stuff, like Coast to Coast is this completely forgettable 1980 film.
This is a guy trying to keep his insurance. I think it's pretty clear toward the end.
By the end. Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing, is I think the last major feature film he did was Jaws the Revenge, and that sent him into a TV hellhole that I don't believe he escaped from. I don't think he ever got a non-TV movie again after that.
I believe you're right. Everything I'm looking at is all
so TV that was like his that was his last theatrical film. But for a period of time, like, to have made White Lightning, Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, MacArthur, and Nightmares, it's a pretty fucking good run of films in 10
Absolutely.
Years. And then to do Jaws the Revenge, to do a movie so bad that you killed one of the most lucrative franchises in history.
Okay, quick sidebar.
Trip to the sidebar.
The more I think about Jaws the Revenge and what it cost Michael Caine to be in that movie, like that the story about, you know, I've seen the house I bought with the money I made from Jaws 4 and it's bloody magnificent. Yeah, but it's also the reason that, one, you couldn't be in Switching Channels, and two, you couldn't accept your Oscar for Hannah and Her Sisters. Like, Jaws the Revenge, like, is this weird sort of Faustian deal with the devil that Michael Caine made that blew up in his face.
And blew up in Sargent's face.
Yeah.
But so who does Joseph Sargent have shooting second unit for him?
Oh my God.
Here we go.
We don't just want him. We need him.
We it is Hal fucking Needham. And you want to talk origin stories. This is Hal Needham on second unit of White Lightning. He is also second unit of on Gator, which means he's doing the stunts.
He is doing the stunts, which in both movies are pretty spectacular.
Yes. And so who directs the second film, my friend, Gator?
That would be Burt Reynolds in his directorial debut.
Working alongside Hal Needham. So I want you to think about this. So in terms of three hick classics, going 73.
We call them classics.
76. And 77, or is it, yeah, it's 77 that was Bandit, right?
Yes, that's correct.
73, 76, 77, we go from Burt Reynolds starring in and Needham shooting second unit to 76, Burt Reynolds starring, directing, Hal Needham shooting second unit to Smokey and the Bandit, Burt Reynolds starring, Hal Needham directing.
Yes.
So that is the progression of three of the great Hicksploitation classics. And it's very, very interesting to see how this works. Oddly enough, in the second film we're about to talk about, not nearly the stunts there are in this one. This is, White Lightning is a great car chase movie with some really great stuff. And really, honestly, this is, if you've ever watched Smokey and the Bandit and go, this is fun, but I really kind of wish I could watch the darker, meaner version of Smokey and the Bandit. That's this fucking movie.
Absolutely.
This is the, oh, hey, this is a crime world and these people fucking hate each other and these people can't trust each other. And oh, yeah, the blocker car is gonna do more than just kind of drive around in some slick car. It's actually gonna be a souped up fucking car designed to run, to hit things.
Yeah.
Like, and to do crazy shit. And there's some good fucking crazy stunts in this.
There is a chase where Burt Reynolds is being chased by the cops and he runs his car off of a hill onto a garbage barge.
Yeah, like a dirt truck.
Yeah.
A dirt barge.
And the car lands not in the center, but kind of off the back with the wheels hanging off. Apparently, not what it was intended to do. The intention of the stunt was to land dead center in the barge, and something went very wrong. Hal Needham was driving that car when something went very wrong and ended up crashing kind of, I mean, where it ends up in the final shot. And Burt Reynolds apparently, like, dove in and was like, because Hal Needham was knocked unconscious. He had to go to the hospital. Like, it was an ugly, ugly accident that happened, and they left the final shot in the movie.
And then have a little thing, like, what'd you do to the undercarriage of that car? I had told you I dinged it up. So then this movie starts getting meaner, because now he goes undercover, and he starts collecting dirt on everybody. Now, the big thing that he's explained to his folks is, I'm not turning in any whiskey runners. I'm not turning in people.
See, and I think that's a really interesting sort of, like, that scene with his parents, where, I mean, his mom is just torn up about the younger brother dying, and his dad is grilling Burt Reynolds about, like, you know, this is how we've made money. Like, are you turning your back on everybody you know? And he's like, no, Pa, I'm not turning in any runners. I just want to get this sheriff. That's all I'm here to do.
I would just like to also point out, this is where we get kind of the divergence of what the fuck is going on with his sequel. Because he gets out of prison. What's the first thing he do? He goes and talks to his parents. He has a 6-year-old daughter out there somewhere.
According to the sequel.
According to the sequel. But he doesn't give a shit. And going to see his daughter is not an important thing on his agenda. Nor is going to see the woman that is her mother, who apparently was waiting for him while he was in prison and then took off. So
he had revenge on his mind.
So he goes to see his folks and have dinner and explain to them what's going on. But then he goes and starts... He inserts himself in the local crime scene, and everybody pretty much knows what the fuck he's there for. We don't trust this fucking guy. Who the fuck is this guy? And then, of course, our sheriff finds out that, hey, the feds have inserted a guy down here and he's working with this guy. And we're like, I know exactly who that motherfucker is. And then they set out to get him and kill him and end up hurting all the wrong people along the way, leading up to Burt Reynolds getting fucked up.
Yeah, there's a scene in this movie where his contact, whose name is Dude, like, tries to walk into his garage and just gets fucking both barrels of a shotgun. Just bam. It is a brutal shotgun death. By the way, his wife in the movie is played by Diane Ladd.
Yes, mother of Cheryl Ladd, who is the mother of...
Laura Dern. No, Laura Dern is I think Diane Ladd is also Laura Dern's mother, because she makes her first film appearance at 6 years old in this movie. So I found that really, really interesting.
I didn't realize Laura Dern was in this.
Laura Dern is, so Dude's wife, who's always kind of hanging around the house, and in one scene, apparently is threatened with rape if she doesn't give up Dude's location, and it's just that... You want to talk about an ugly fucking scene with that sheriff? That scene is gonna, it'll haunt you for a while for sure. But yes, Diane Ladd is the mother of Laura Dern, and she makes her film appearance in this movie at 6 years old. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, there's that. I don't want to jump too far ahead, but what ultimately ends up happening with the sheriff?
Well, we are, because we've got to get into Gator soon.
True story. So. The chase that ends with the sheriff going into the river in his car, and we just watch that car sink, and Gator just watches the car sink, and then the hat comes back up, and you're like, oh, you just let this guy drown.
Well, but that's the thing, is that is the beautiful irony of this movie, where he sets up, where you're wondering what he's doing this entire third act, and then what he's done is he's set up the real revenge, which is this guy dies just like his brother did. And he dies in the same awful way, and that's the justice. And then he gets this big fuck-all parade, and it's like, and he watches the parade, and the whole town mourns the death of a local hero, and all the characters we know that this guy was fucking dirty as fuck and deserved his death in the worst way.
And also, interesting to note before we move on to Gator, White Lightning was supposed to be Steven Spielberg's first movie. It was supposed to be his first feature film. He did Duel for TV.
Right.
But this was supposed to be his first feature film. He talked about how he did 2.5 months of pre-production. He met Burt Reynolds. He found most of the locations, began to cast it, and then realized it wasn't something he wanted to do for his first film. He didn't want to start his career as a hard hat journeyman director. He wanted to do something that was more personal. So he left the project and Joseph Sargent came in. But isn't that crazy that this was almost... Steven Spielberg's first movie?
Well, yeah, I think it would ultimately be remembered differently. I think it would probably be shot much better. It would be much because Sargent was good at a lot of things, but he did not have a really great visual eye.
This is true. Yeah, I mean, even something like Taking Pelham 1-2-3, I don't remember for the cinematography.
No. I mean, it's a great fucking movie. He really gets tension, and that's what he does so well here. And maybe that's the thing, is so many of his films have a revenge element to them, and that's why when he finally got in a Jaws movie, that even the shark's getting revenge.
Even the shark is getting
I'm not fucking wrong.
Hey, I'm here to investigate that robbery on the train. I'm a shark. I hope that's okay. It's like, what the fuck, Walter Matt? Why is Walter Matthau a shark? What is going on? I don't understand.
I kind of want to see that movie.
Or it's The Odd Couple, where it's still Felix, who's like very persnickety and uptight, and then Oscar is a shark.
But didn't Spielberg, instead of this, go off to make Sugarland Express?
He did. He made Sugarland Express.
So you could see, like, he's still in that kind of...
Which, isn't that entire movie just a chase scene, pretty much?
Pretty much.
Like, okay. I feel like you were this close... If that's what you wanted, to your first movie being second united by fucking Hal Needham, like, that's the thing that really bums me out about this. Like, not that it was almost directed by Spielberg. It was almost directed by Spielberg with Hal Needham doing second unit. Like, holy shit, would we still be talking about that? I mean, yeah. We're still talking about White Lightning as it stands on Junk Food Cinema. Don't get me wrong.
Can you imagine if Steven Spielberg did second unit on Megaforce? How much better a movie that would be? That would be the greatest movie ever made instead of just one of the great movies ever made.
Can you imagine if Walter Matthau in a shark costume was in Eliminators? Like,
holy shit.
What a different movie that would have been.
That would have been a really different movie. Da-da-da-da. It's lean. It's mean. It's weird. Like, there's lots of weird asides. There's a couple of weird relationships going on.
Yes, but something to keep in mind in that realm, because as we go into Gator, it's going to change. The love interest in this movie is kind of just on the sidelines of the main story. In other words, it never the movie never stops completely for the pursuit of a romantic angle. There is a woman who's with one of the runners that Burt Reynolds is involved with that's very into Burt Reynolds, and they end up kind of sleeping together. That's it. Like, there is no sort of love interest for Burt Reynolds in this movie. He's never pursuing a woman throughout the course of the film. And that's very different to what happens in Gator. Because Gator does have that moment where the film kind of grinds to a halt to...
Oh boy, does it.
To pursue sort of this romantic storyline that is very, in my opinion, unnecessary. So I think maybe this is a good point to go ahead and jump into... Gator.
Run, good whiskey.
Gator's fucking weird.
Gator's weird. Now, Gator has a couple of things going for it. Maybe even more so than its predecessor. One is, it has a fucking killer theme song.
God damn it, I hate that, we're probably both looking at it on our phones at the same time, because let's just, first of all, it opens up with Jerry Reed fucking singing... He was raised in the swamp in back of a slaw. He grew up eating rattlesnake meat, drinking homemade brew. Now folks here about to call him Gator, and everybody knows him well. Meanest man ever to hit the swamp. Folks swear he comes straight out of hell.
Which, for most of these movies, Burt Reynolds is not a character I would describe as so mean he'd come out of the hell itself. You know what I mean? Like, that just seems like... But it also has that great thing that all of the 70s folk songs did, where it starts with just talking.
Yeah.
It's like, you think he's talking about, you know, Big John, or he's talking about Bad Leroy Brown.
He's talking about Gator.
He was raised in the swamp on the back of a slaw. He grew up eating rattlesnake meat, drinking homemade brew. And it's like, I want to meet this guy. Absolutely. And this movie opens with a fucking boat chase to end all goddamn boat chases.
Yeah, it's like, what did we do in the last movie? Well, we drove cars. Well, this time we'll drive a boat.
Yes.
And so it is, It is exactly that. But well, first of all, it doesn't open with a boat chase. First of all, it opens with racism again. There is like 3 minutes of Jewish jokes at the beginning of this fucking movie.
And this is where this is what I was talking about, where this movie starts to lean into the Southern a little too hard.
Like the Northerners are supposed to hate this guy. The Southerners are like, well, he is talking about them New York folk.
And it's like, if they had left it as subtle as New York, huh? New York. It'd still be racist, but you'd be like, all right. No, they're like, what's his name? Greenstein. He's a Jew. It's like, oh, we get it. We get why you don't like this guy. It's Jack Weston, by the way, an amazing fucking actor who I love from a movie called Wait Until Dark. And he's just like, just fucking underline that he's Jewish, which again, would be something in and of itself if they didn't also make him so bumbling he's practically a buffoon. It's like, Jesus Christ, Gator.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
It's this movie is problematic. This movie is a bit problematic at time, from the 15-year-old hookers to the relative racism, to moments like, because we mentioned earlier where Jerry Reed goes, well, you know, Gator, you've always been colorblind, so let me just explain to you. There's easy blacks. And then
he's condescending to him for being colorblind. It's like as if that's a bad thing. Also, I want to say two things about 15-year-old hookers, which is whittling down my usual list of 10 to 12 things.
Usually, you could, your podcast, 15-year-old hookers, the best and the worst.
Sure. But at least with the 15-year-old hookers, one, Burt Reynolds definitely does not have sex with her. Like, is very appalled at how young she is and that she has to work in this. And the other thing is, the only person like prostituting 15-year-old is the guy who's established to be the villain. Like, that seems to me to be the carryover from White Lightning, is as long as we establish that this guy's a piece of shit, then yes, these horrible things that go on are forgivable, because it's like, yes, that's a bad person doing it and he will be taken down.
But
very Hays Code, in my opinion.
But this is the same hooker that was also flirting with Burt Reynolds earlier in the movie.
True story.
And Burt Reynolds then smacks her around a bit.
Yeah, I think he thinks he's trying to smack some sense into her, but it comes off.
He's smacking around a drugged up 15-year-old hooker.
It comes off like,
That's a scene that happens. Burt Reynolds smacks around a drugged up 15-year-old
hooker. It's a little less Gator McCluskey and a little more Ike Clanton. Ike Turner. Maybe Ike Clanton. He was an asshole too. He's a member of the Cowboys. It's a little more Ike Turner than it is Gator McCluskey. The point being, this movie is a fucking cartoon compared to White Lightning.
It really is. Like, you know what this movie feels like? This movie, from going from White Lightning to Gator, is like going from Sean Connery Bond and jumping straight into
Roger Moore
Bond.
I think it's going from Connery to the last two Pierce Brosnan James Bond. Like, I think it's that much of a leap from, like, we're doing this and we're definitely doing this, to what the fuck are we even doing?
Like, why are we running around with a cat lady?
Can we talk about the fucking henchman?
Yeah, well, I was about to get to the henchman.
That Jerry Reed has?
Jerry Reed, first of all, Jerry Reed is the villain.
Bama McCall.
If there's any reason to watch this movie at all, it's watching Jerry Reed with a sawed-off double-barrel shotgun.
Just wearing some Jason Murphy suits and shooting a shotgun.
And chewing up the scenery in all the best ways.
Yeah.
Like, he is delightful in this movie. And don't get me wrong, Burt Reynolds is really charming in this movie. And if Burt Reynolds weren't charming enough, there are scenes of him playing with puppies.
Yes. There's
so many animals in this movie. I'm like, just, he just wanted to hang. Like, they're using puppies as a prop in a scene. Like, it's just him eating breakfast, hanging out with puppies. Because as you do. Like, it's like, okay, you know, if I were a woman, that would blow both of my ovaries right out of my body in 1976. I'm sorry.
And speaking of his sexuality and his macho-ness, what's the chief difference between 73 Burt Reynolds and 76 Burt Reynolds?
He's got the stash.
There he is.
The glorious stash. And he is now it achieved his final form. And
you are witness to a great becoming.
Yes. It's like his power, it's over 9,000.
There's no way that could be right. It can't.
that, yeah, the mustache is there and he's all charm. And that's, and this is like, we don't really hear much of the laugh in the first one, but we hear the laugh a lot in this one. And he's just having a good fucking time.
Dude,
in this
that
movie.
Scene where he is slipped a Mickey in his drink and he's just waiting to pass out.
And he is just eating it up. He is like having fun playing the drunk, high, fucked up guy.
Yeah.
But okay, so let's talk about these two henchmen. First of all, you have the Jaws ripoff. You have
now,
Bones.
Interestingly enough, that role was supposed to be Richard Kiel.
What?
Yes.
I'm shocked.
Shocked to find
that Richard Kiel was supposed to be that character.
Shocked to find there is gambling in this establishment. Yes, and what because I believe after... it was after The Longest Yard. He'd worked with Richard Kiel in The Longest Yard and promised him, to work with him again. And then the way it worked out, he wasn't available when they finally started shooting. And so Richard Kiel hand selected this actor who was a friend of his, who is a monster of a man. And so much so that, and when I say this is a cartoon, I mean that throughout this movie, this giant man with a cartoon voice is driving around with his head poking out the top of the car like it's goddamn Wacky Racers.
Yeah, the first time you see it, you're like, why is that guy standing up through the sunroof driving the car? It's like, sitting.
He's sitting. His name is William Ingesser is his name. Not a lot of acting credits to his name, but holy shit, is he huge. And then the other henchman is Smiley. Hi, I'm Smiley.
By the way, Smiley is going to be instantly recognizable to all of you as he is kind of the lead dipshit cowboy in
Blazing Saddles.
Mm-hmm. Like he's that guy that is constantly having shit pulled on him.
And not only that, but he's going after homosexuals in this movie the way his character in Blazing Saddles went after black people. Like it's so strange. It's like, you just got out of prison. Heard there's a lot of queers in prison. It's just like
crawling all over you.
Okay. Like, can I finish my dinner now? Or you, oh no, you have more to say. Okay.
Oh no. The thing is what I think they were really doing with that. He was fishing to see if he could get laid.
Yeah.
Like it was that kind of, hey, I hear, I'm not going to bring up that I'm gay.
What do you think about gay? He's like, okay. He's like basically a mincing Jim Neighbors with that voice.
And so these are the henchmen that Jerry Reed has to manage his empire of fucked up stuff.
Yeah.
While you know, once again, Gator is undercover for the federal government, trying to get the dirt on Jerry Reed so he can nail him to the wall.
Because he and Jerry Reed were friends many years ago. So
they went to high school together.
Government basically kind of blackmails Burt Reynolds. Kind of a stone cold situation.
Well, no, that's what I found interesting is if you want to link all of these movies together and make an apology for Stone Cold having shown up in the middle of October, we've fucking done the work for you. So we go straight from football in prison to Stone Cold to the movies that Stone Cold was ripping off.
And here's something I didn't even catch when we talked about Stone Cold and then went immediately into switching channels. Both of those movies have subplots about someone on death row.
Yep.
Like someone, that was also... I was like, oh, wait a minute. That was unintentional. But yeah, that's some good headcanon right there. So yeah, he's forced to kind of go on this undercover mission to take down Bama McCall and ends up really falling for a reporter who's also investigating the corruption of Bama McCall and the local mayor.
And then the movie grinds to a fucking halt.
Played by Lauren Hutton, who is an amazing actress, don't get me wrong, and she's good in this, but again, we have to remember, this is Burt Reynolds' directorial debut, and there's a great story, I think, sort of in the same realm as the house I bought with the money I made from Jaws 4, where it goes that when Burt Reynolds originally got the script, as Burt Reynolds has said this, he thought it was terrible, and then when they said, yeah, but do you want to direct it, he said, oh, I actually really like the script now. He was just so excited about the possibility of directing that he went to guys like Robert Aldrich and Bogdanovich and was asking them all these questions about directing. He really wanted to get the craft down. And I don't know that in his first attempt at it, he necessarily got it.
No, he did not.
There's a lot of sort of odd cuts and shifts in tone that don't really...
There's a lot of really shitty out of focus shots.
Yeah.
Like shots that just don't work. Like it's like there's one shot that's sustained that is either a really, really big 35 millimeter blow up, yeah, which essentially how they would do is they would just go in closer on the blow up and just cut it and blow it up and cut it and blow it up to where it is so blurry and out of focus. Or it looks like it's a shot straight out of the dailies. Like, it's just like, what the fuck is it doing here? And then all of a sudden it cuts and you're like, oh, we're back in a real movie again. And there's several weird shots like that. There's stuff where stuff isn't really in focus, but they went with it anyway. Yeah. And the tonal shift, this movie's all over the map. Yeah. Like at times it's a dark revenge movie, and at other times it's a, you know, a love movie where a love story where they're rolling around on the beach for 5 minutes.
Sharing one sweater. What the fuck is that about?
Yeah.
There's a scene where they're literally, I was watching and I went, oh my God, that's embarrassing. The costumer gave them both the same sweater. They're wearing the exact same. Oh no, they are wearing the exact same sweater. They're curled up in it like,
yeah,
like it's a circus tent or something. It's so fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
And that's of course while inside the house, Jack Weston is getting accosted by the local cat lady, like, I find you oddly attractive, and like all this other, like, it's just, I was like, this is such a fucking cartoon. And then we smash from that into they've just stolen all these accounting records from City Hall, and they're going to bring down the mayor. And Jerry Reed finds them and kills Jack Weston outright, sets the house on fire so that the papers all burn up. But the cat lady freaks out because her cats are still in there. She runs back in to save them, and then she dies in the fire. Like, it goes from a fucking cartoon to, like, a fucking Abel Ferreira movie so quickly. So fucking quickly.
Yeah. And then it gets, like, mean again. And then you get this really weird series of shots in a fight along the beach.
Yeah.
In which it's, for a while, it's one tracking shot of Jerry Reed and Burt Reynolds beating the fuck out of each other through these, you know, beach shacks.
I'm going to say this. Days off shooting Smoking the Bandit. I'm guessing there was some beach brawls between Burt Reynolds and Jerry Reed. A couple too many Coors, and all of a sudden they're throwing punches at each other. Like, I absolutely could see that happening.
Yeah, and it's the thing about Gator is Gator's fun. Gator, you know, when Gator is firing on all cylinders, it's a cool, weird little movie. But it's not a worthy successor to White Lightning. Like, White Lightning is so good and so mean. And it's one of those movies where I could say, hey, you know what? You want a good deep fried Southern movie? Watch White Lightning.
Yeah.
And then you get to, should I watch Gator? Yeah, sure. Like, if you're going to watch them together, but, you know, if
don't I watch had to, Gator by itself.
If I had to watch one, I'm watching White Lightning.
It's just like all the cartoony stuff. And then, like, there's literally a scene where they're trying to break into City Hall, mm-hmm, while Burt Reynolds is literally having to juggle cats. Like,
yeah.
What the... Like, I can just imagine Burt Reynolds being like, yeah, it's funny. Funny. We're gonna put the movie because it's fucking funny. It's like, but is it?
Is it, though?
is it Burt?
So here's my headcanon.
Yes,
I have headcanon.
Play the canon logo, Meryl.
Burt Reynolds is a football player, and the thing is, he's Gator McCluskey. Now, we learned that Gator McCluskey left high school in the ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that in Gator. So Gator went to another school, and he wanted to play football, but he was the deep-fried Southern Swamp kid, so he kind of pretended that he wasn't and changed his name, and played football under a different name while he was there at school. Ends up getting drafted to college. He's really good at it. Goes to college, plays pro ball, can't take the criminal out of him, and he ends up betting, you know, short shifting himself.
I love this.
Yeah. Short shifting himself, going to jail, plays in jail, and that's, you know, and then we get the longest yard. So that's the longest yard. So now he at the end of the longest yard, he's still in prison. He walks back. Now at the beginning of White Lightning, we know who he really is now. Like, he's been transferred to another institution. He's doing his time. And now he's got to get out. His brother's been killed. He's got to go back. He goes back home, and we find out his name is really Gator. He's Gator McCluskey. Everybody in this part of the world knows him as Gator McCluskey, and they aren't going to call him anything else. And by the way, nobody's going to talk about the football because, you know, you just don't do that. So now he's Gator McCluskey. White Lightning happens. And that leads into, he goes back to prison at the end of that. He ends up finally getting out. He's Gator now. And we get through Gator, and we get to the end of Gator, and, you know, the feds are just, they're never going to let up. The feds are constantly going to be on his ass. So he changes his name, not really changes his name, but now he's doing what he's always done, and he's running blocking car under the name Bandit.
Bandit.
So now...
Well, they see, and that works because Bandit's not his real name, nor do we ever learn his fucking real name in that
he's
movie.
Just Bandit. So now we've gone from... Gator McCluskey is Bandit in Bandit 2, 1 and 2.
May I add to this headcanon? So in Smokey and the Bandit, we have a situation where the Bandit cozies up to a truck driver who the truck driver, he also is running under an assumed name, a handle, because he's never really done anything wrong, but he's always going to, if he uses his name, he's always going to be tied to the legacy of his evil twin brother, Bama McCall. So Lenny McCall goes by the handle on the trucker CB of Snowman and joins up with the Bandit to run this beer from Texarkana.
So now he's done running whiskey. And by the way, now that, you know, it's so prominent in the South, there's been so much deregulation on the blue laws. Now you can just get Jack Daniels wherever. So, you know, there's not really much call for that anymore. So what is the Bandit going to do? Well, the Bandit decides he's going to make money driving from coast to coast and win the Cannonball Run.
Holy shit.
So he, of course, is now hooked up with his buddy, a crazy old boy that goes by the name of Captain Chaos. And he then attempts to win the Cannonball Run twice.
Look.
This is my new Burt Reynolds headcanon.
This is the Burt Reynolds cinematic universe we didn't know we hell needed. Holy shit, I'm going to watch all of those movies and think about that. That's fantastic. I also want to talk about, in that beach brawl, there is a scene where Bones, the giant henchman, goes into a hotel room and they've rigged it up with gas. So he goes in and they've rigged up like a broom to fall over. And as soon as he fires at it, the entire fucking hotel explodes. That was a fucking crazy. It was the Ocean Plaza Motel in Dunstan Beach. So technically... Burt Reynolds went to Dunstan to check in. I'm just saying that's what happened in the movie.
Whoa.
That's what happened in the movie. You can look it up. It's a verifiable fact.
He had a Dunstan check-in.
Yes, he had a Dunstan check-in. And then this whole thing ends with Burt Reynolds beating the shit out of Jerry Reed to the point that he's... My favorite shot is he's holding up the sort of the wooden facade of a hot dog stand on the beach. And he's in like the helicopter for the police are like coming up over his shoulder. And he's like, all right, it's done. It's over. And then he still picks it all the way up and slams it against Jerry Reed. Oh, it's like watching a fucking ECW hardcore match between Gator and Bama. Like the formerly a tag team, but now they're like, they've come up a storyline with one's heel and one's face. And they're just like slamming wooden boards into each other. It's pretty fantastic, actually. Yeah. And then this is where the ending of this movie to me is the point where I go, yes, Gator is way more red-leaning than White Lightning was, because he and Lauren Hutton have been cultivating this relationship throughout the whole movie. And then she ends up breaking the story about Bama McCall and the corrupt mayor, and she gets to go on, she gets interviewed by Walter Cronkite and go on the nightly news, and it's this huge deal. And then she gets offered a job in New York and basically tells Burt Reynolds, see ya! New York literally steals Burt Reynolds' girlfriend in this movie. And when you think about how this movie started and its view of New York and the fact that essentially New York steals Gator's girlfriend at the end of this movie, and it just ends with like, okay, bye, credits.
But that's the thing, is that it doesn't just steal the girlfriend. She's actually kind of like, so are we going to New York? You know, that's her tone. And he's like, nope. Can't take the boy out of the South. I still got a couple movies to make where I run blocker car.
By the way, in that exchange, we get a full 4 years before Empire Strikes Back. He says, I love you. And she says, I know.
So maybe.
What?
Maybe he went, because he improvised that scene. Harrison Ford improvised that line. So maybe he was just ripping off Gator.
Dude. Okay, now we're going to get into a whole separate branch of headcanon that I really... There's one thing I wanted to talk about in Gator. There's a character who Gator is infatuated with who... No. Actually, that's in White Lightning. Who keeps talking about shaky pudding as a euphemism for sex, I guess?
Yes.
Is shaky pudding in and of itself separate from the euphemism a real dish? Is it a real Southern thing that I just don't know about?
I couldn't fucking tell you, because that's different. That's a different part of the Deep South. That, you know, like I'm a Texas boy, but I'm not from that kind of South.
I mean, she brings it up even when, by the way, the thing we didn't mention about White Lightning, and when we're talking about one movie leaning one way and the other, how does Burt Reynolds' life get saved in White Lightning? He gets to recoup from serious injury.
Oh, yeah.
At a home for unwed mothers. And it saves his life.
And by the way, there's a girl there that was really close friends with his brother. And the impression that they're giving is that the baby there is Gator's nephew.
Hold on. What if it was a niece and she ended up growing up a few years later and they just never told her that Gator wasn't her father, it was Gator's brother, and he just raised her. That's where the daughter comes from in Gator!
That could be it.
Holy shit, we just cracked this case wide open.
Although they did say, kept saying, feed him.
Oh, well, so. Well, I guess that kind of shoots that headcanon right in the foot. But yeah, these two movies, I think, are, to understand what Hicksploitation is, you watch these two movies, you watch Smokey and the Bandit, you watch Walking Tall. Like, that is basically your starter kit for Hicksploitation.
That is the Hicksploitation starter kit, without a doubt.
And you and will totally way, understand
this
genre.
Nothing, it's a good collection of films.
Yeah.
Like, it is really, like, there's a lot of bad Hicksploitation, and there's a lot of mediocre Hicksploitation. This is kind of the creme de la creme of Hicksploitation.
Yeah. I would say generally, and I hate to say this, I really do, but I would steer clear of any Hicksploitation movies directed or produced by Roger Corman, because those tended to be very, 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 like,
problematic.
Problematic one, copy of a copy of a copy, bad kind of situation as well. I mean, if you consider maybe Big Bad Mama a Hicksploitation movie, like that was.
And Big Bad Mama too.
But other than that, I would kind of steer clear of movies like Mason County Jail or Dixie Dynamite, I think one of them's called. They're just not good. But yeah, the movies that we've mentioned, definitely White Lightning and Gator, definitely Smokey and the Bandit, definitely the first Walking Tall, maybe even the second Walking Tall.
I would say the second Walking Tall for sure.
I think that's a really good place to start. And I'm so glad that, you know, these are, you can't talk about Burt Reynolds movies, especially on a podcast like ours, without mentioning at least White Lightning. And I think if White Lightning is the perfectly cooked steak entree, Gator is the weird ass shaky pudding dessert where you're just like, I don't even know what the fuck this is, but I guess I kind of like it as a follow up to the great meal that I just had.
You know what it kind of is? It's a very well cooked steak with scattered, smothered, and covered all the way as a side dish. I mean, it's like going from a nice steak to a Waffle House.
I was gonna say it's a Waffle House steak. That's really interesting.
And you know, it's scattered, smothered, and covered. There's something to be said for all the way scattered, smothered, and covered. I once watched Jason Murphy attempt to eat a triple scattered, smothered, and covered.
Now, explain to me what the triple is. Explain to me how that works.
The triple is three. So essentially, for those of you that are unfamiliar with Waffle House, they have a hash brown patty. And getting it scattered is to actually get it kind of chopped up and turned into regular hash browns, as opposed to a solid hash brown mass. There's a single, a double, and a triple. So it's three hash brown patties scattered, smothered. That means with cheese, covered. Smothered is with, smothered with the mushrooms. The mushrooms come on it all the way, but they're scattered, smothered, and covered. And it comes with cheese and I'm blanking what the other thing is. And then of course it comes with it, chili and mushrooms and just,
Jesus.
There's 10 different things that go on this fucking thing. And it is, I have never seen Jason Murphy so sick in his life. It was, he got a third of the way through that. And then it was like, he complained he had a brick in his stomach for a solid day. That's what that is. That is the, it's a little bit of everything. It is a potpourri of a Burt Reynolds movie. There's a little something for everyone in there. There's a boat chase. There's a couple of decent car bits, but that's the other thing is White Lightning is a movie known for its fucking car chases and stunts. Mm-hmm. And that ain't the case here. No. Like it's more detective work and more him kind of wandering around and yucking it up with people.
Lots of yucking up. That scene where he gets drugged and he's just waiting to pass out is pretty, like, to me, signature Bert. Like, it's so great. He's like, well, what'd you put in my drink? And the Bones goes, yellows. And Bert, for the next 5 minutes, just goes,
yellows.
Am I talking too fast for you, Bones? He's like, you said I was going to pass out in 5 minutes. It's been 4 minutes, 50 seconds. Okay. And then smashes a glass into Bones' face. And he's like, really wish I'd passed out now, but I won't. It's not happening. I regret that. There's also a great scene at the beginning where Jerry Reed goes into a bar that he's trying to get protection money from. And the lady at the door says, we got a new bouncer. And he goes in and talks to this bouncer and then just smashes a beer glass into his face. And then another bouncer comes up and he throws him through the like a mirrored wall. And he goes up to the owner. He's like, yeah, those new bouncers are pretty great. Bounce one off the wall, bounce one through a window. And it's just like, oh, my God, yes. Yes, Jerry Reed.
Yeah, no, Jerry Reed is having the time of his life in this movie. And clearly they had a great time because they would go on to make several movies together shortly after this. But you know what? The Eastbound and Down is so much better than Gator. As cool as Gator is as a theme song.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right.
It's no Eastbound and Down.
But, I mean, there's nothing in White Lightning to compare to. I mean, other than that I think they call it the Hound Chase theme that ended up in Kill Bill.
Yeah.
As far as like songs, like lyrical songs go, there's nothing in White Lightning. So, I mean, the Gator song wins by default there.
Yeah.
If nothing else. Which brings us to our junk food pairing, which is not actually Waffle House smothered, covered all the way.
Scattered, smothered, covered all the way.
All those. This is something that I actually used to drink a lot of and I love the hell out of.
Oh, no.
Old Smoky Apple Pie Moonshine. Have you had this? It's the one that comes in the jar.
No.
I know at a few parties I threw, there was like, it was kind of being handed around. It's fucking delicious. And it's not actual moonshine, which as Cargill mentioned, is unpalatable. Like
somebody bought me some corn moonshine once and it is, and it's called whiskey, but I mean,
but
technically
my soul to take is also called a movie. I mean, you can't always trust the things that are sold to you the way that.
Yeah. It's a Craven movie. technically,
I would say it was a Craven script for a Nightmare on Elm Street sequel that never got made. And then they just churned it out as something else. Also, one of our researchers, reminded me of, Gator Bites, which is actually just deep fried alligator.
Yeah.
And it's fucking delicious.
I would, my junk food pairing, I would go with Mountain Dew.
Oh, yes.
Mountain Dew.
Oh, yes.
For those of you that don't know, Mountain Dew was a soda specifically designed to be mixed with corn liquor. Like it was supposed to be, it was specifically designed as a mixer to go in with corn liquor to make corn liquor palatable. To make it, to turn it into a drink that you could sip on and get drunk off of. That's the whole point to Mountain Dew. And then people just drank Mountain Dew on its own and decided that, hey, you know what? I like this on its own.
Here's the thing. If you watch Mad Men, you learn the history of certain brands. One of the things they talked about with Mountain Dew when they got that account, their original like spokes character was a hillbilly with a still.
Yeah.
That was literally like Mountain Dew's first like character that they were using to sell the product. So I believe it. Oh, I believe it. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on this double wide episode of Junk Food Cinema.
Jesus Christ.
If you would like to hear more.
Jesus Christ, Brian.
If you would like
Jesus Christ.
More of Cargill hating the jokes that I make, you can
Jesus
go,
Christ, Brian.
Go to iTunes.
.com.
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 Blog Talk Radio.
.com.
.com.
to find our catalog there. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And once again, if you really like the show,
.com.
I mean, you like it as much as Jerry Reed likes wearing those leisure suits. You can go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema for as little as a dollar an episode. You get access to bonus content nobody else gets to hear. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Massawyrm. That's MassawyrM.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at Bri Guy Salisbury. And then I'm just going to say it again. Follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. But we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to say a few words about Junk Food Cinema. Hammer pulled back on a 12-gauge pump, watching that swamp looking out for the law while we make the best breakfast tacos you ever saw.